From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything goes bump in the night. I'm your host, the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing,
yes,
the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. Yes, another edition of Bob After Dark as we drift into the spooky season.
We're kicking off the spooky season pretty hard today for a podcast exclusive episode.
Yeah,
you know, occasionally Count and I's schedules get a little wonky, especially with my personal life being as hectic as it is. Sometimes scheduling gets a little wonky and we have to shove a recording session in as soon as we possibly can. And today we are literally shoving an episode into a schedule that normally isn't where I'm at. I'm in between two shows. I'm usually the last one of the night. I'm not usually before somebody. So no. this is a little different. You're out early. You had to put your sunblock on.
Bob before dark, I guess.
Bob during sunset.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not even sunset. Maybe Bob during twilight.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. So what's going on, Count? Your weekend update?
I tell you, Bob, the weekend was good. You know, it's weird because when we're filming this, as we're recording this, weather's still pretty nice. It's summer-like outside.
Man, did
it's
you not see? Yeah, really, I know
we're fall not solstice just yet.
We're not a fall podcast or weather podcast by any means. But man, I looked at the 7-day outreach. There's an 80-degree day coming up in a week.
We got a couple, I think.
That's
on the
horizon, weird.
So, but you know what? We've been known to have some mysterious October weather. That's the fun of it. But you know, I know a lot of people are going out there having fun, maybe bobbing for apples or
pumpkin patches. I know people are already in picking apples.
Picking pumpkins and picking apples and all that good stuff. But this past weekend, what did I do? That was a... Geez, Bob, I had such adventurous weekends, I feel like, in September. I'm not sure what exactly occurred this past weekend. But, you know, all in all, it was restful. It was that transition from the, you know, the solstices.
The solstices. We went from the
summer solstice to the fall's autumn solstice. So that was a nice transition period. I had a nice restful weekend.
Sounds good.
How about you?
I went to a wedding.
Wedding.
Bob here, he goes, he does have a personal life.
Yeah.
Outside of Bob After Dark. Yeah. Some of my oldest friends who've been together 14 years.
14 years?
14 years together with the same person.
Wow.
Like since high school, right?
Wow.
They got married and it was a beautiful time. I got to see some of my oldest friends because I don't get to see friends very often these days. My most social interactions are with you.
Yeah. Well, hey.
My once a week I get to spend with you hour and a half. And then I'm back home taking care of mom, taking care of the show, taking care of my bookings or seeing the queen of the night. But outside of that, you are my social life.
Well, hey, but you got to experience a beautiful wedding.
It was a beautiful wedding. Yes. Anyway, I won't finish that.
Okay.
So if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, I guess in this case, just listening. If this is your first time ever listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly-ish paranormal show where we talk about legends, lore, supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, and of course, Count Panic's favorite pumpkin carving shape.
Ooh, whoa, pumpkin carving shape?
Like the face. What's your favorite face? You like face, happy face?
Here's the thing. When I was younger, and I still can't probably carve a great pumpkin, some people have amazing pumpkin carving
skills. Yes, there are people that do the layers, the shaving.
And then designs and everything. So but if we're going by faces, I was just a basic pumpkin. The triangle eyes, the triangle nose.
And a happy face or a sad face?
And a happy face.
I get it.
A very traditional pumpkin. And even the teeth. I just skipped out on the teeth. I just went straight for the mouth and just...
Yeah,
kind of cut like a grin into it. So very basic pumpkin carving skills, Bob.
Sure. That's nothing wrong with that, man.
If I could do a cool pumpkin, I would, but I don't have it in me.
We have a special guest in the studio tonight.
We do?
Yeah, it's my mother.
She's here.
The reason why I bring this up, my mom's here. I had to bring her with to because we were, I got her out of the house for a little bit with her cast on her foot, and we were running late, so I had to bring her to the studio with me. But I, the reason I bring that up is because my mother's probably laughing in the other room right now. I don't know, because it's a soundproof room. But my first pumpkin I ever carved, did you ever hear this story?
I don't know if I've heard this story.
My first pumpkin I ever carved, I was probably, what, like 3 or 4, if I could see her giving a reaction, three or four. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. So I was about 3 or 4, and my mother had the brilliant idea of giving me a potato peeler to carve open my pumpkin.
Oh.
And my mom's making stabbing motions because that's exactly what I did. I opened it up, and let's just say I got sick inside the pumpkin.
You had a rage.
I was two. Thank you.
You're raging against that.
I stabbed into the pumpkin. It looked like a murder scene. Mom said there was pumpkin guts everywhere, and my guts, as I got sick inside the pumpkin.
Because
the smell got to me.
You know, pumpkin carving, there's a lot that goes into pumpkin. The seeds, right? You got to take the seeds out.
You got to get the guts out. You got to hollow it out.
It's a process.
It is a process.
It's not for everybody, Bob. Oh. It's not for everybody. Did you get better since that time?
It depends on who you ask. I like to think so, but the people that see my pumpkins these days tell me I could use work.
Yeah, it takes patience and time.
Fair enough.
With anything.
You know, I'm going to go to going to the old-fashioned way and carving gourds.
Oh.
You know, that was the original thing people did. They carved gourds and apples, I think.
Apples were carving apples. Put an apple on the porch.
Something like that,
The squirrel will take it right off, I guess. But also, I heard that, you know, I know a lot of people like putting pumpkins out. And squirrels, I get squirrels want to eat, but you don't want those beautiful pumpkins damaged too soon with squirrels.
No, of course not.
I learned that, you know, Vaseline, it doesn't harm them. They just kind of slip off the pumpkin and then leave it alone. So if anybody's listening to this and needs a trick to get their, you know, stop creatures from taking bites out of their pumpkin, just put some Vaseline on that bad boy. It's non-harmful and everything. But gourds, the only gourds I know about are the man-eating gourds.
Ah, yes. Yeah, we always call back to the man-eating gourd.
That's all I know about.
It's the finest cryptid we've ever covered. Yeah. That was like, you know, I don't ever catch your attention for episodes, I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like you're here because you have to be here some days.
The man-eating gourd.
Then there's times where you actually like sit down and you're like, oh, I actually enjoy the source material we're talking about. Today we're talking about the man-eating gourd. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'm in for that.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm all about that, man.
Or the Fresno Nightcrawler you were a big fan of. Yolcat.
Yolcat was a big one. Well, I know. Yeah, Yolcat's.
That's your favorite.
Yeah, Yolcat. Well, Nessie. Don't forget Nessie.
Yes, Nessie, of course, too.
But Yolcat for seasonal purposes, yes.
Anywho, so because we're doing a podcast exclusive, usually we split the show up into two parts. We do the weird speaking news of the week, but we're going to cut that out this week. This is going to be not a quicker episode. I guess it will be because some of our fans are like, this episode is not an hour and a half long, Bob. What gives? Oh, you understand. We're in a time crunch. Not a time crunch, but I'm stuck between two shows. And Count Panic here, his counterpart, Tony Panic, has been running the morning show.
Oh, man, doing a lot of stuff.
So we're trying to get him functioning at least to the point where he could get back on the ball here.
Functioning, yeah.
All right, so, Count.
Yeah.
Do you remember what a creepypasta is?
Oh, yes, Bob. These are like the things that online that people, kind of lore, right? Online lore.
Yeah, the online lore. They're horror stories written and passed along, hence the term copy and paste, but this copypasta. Creepypasta, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you're, you know, getting spooky noodle shapes in your mac and cheese. They're online stories passed down literally from online, you know, the couple generations that have been online, passed around from forum to forum, or terrifying tale. Most of the time they're fictional. Sometimes there might be some truth to them. Other times they are belligerently silly, like we've covered on the show before. Sometimes creepypastas aren't the best written things in the world, but you know, there are some really good classic stories out there. You know, one of our most popular episodes we've ever done, Count, we did the Sonic.exe episode, probably the most downloaded episode I've ever done, hands down. And we did the sequel to it, and the sequel is way better than the original, I thought. Do you remember the original and the sequel?
I do remember,
That was, you know, but one of my favorite, like, things in the creepypasta community is when people do a collective of them and they kind of centralize behind a theme. So we talked about the back rooms before, if you remember.
Yep.
Yeah, remember?
I remember the back rooms.
The back rooms.
Stuff you kind of like dream about, right? Or
you slip out of reality.
You slip out of reality.
You clip out of reality into these back rooms, which is space between spaces. Then we talked about the collectors, which, or the handlers. That was the one where you had to pass some sort of complicated test to get a magical item or a quest, you know, or something that always, you know, is a bad thing. Do you remember that? The holders.
I do remember.
Holders. The holders. or my personal favorite collection of creepypasta things that is in one collective is the SCP Foundation. Do you remember the SCP Foundation?
The SCP Foundation. No, I do not.
Okay, we've done a couple episodes on it, folks. You can write Count Panic and say shame on him.
I need a refresher, Bob.
All right, so the SCP Foundation is a collected forum online of people writing these things about what the SCPs are and what an SCP is, secure, contain, protect. And they're anomalous objects, creatures, items, voids of space, anything with an anomalous property, a kind of government offshoot contains them or does their best to contain these items or creatures or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're trying to not let them get out into the public. So think Warehouse 13 meets X-Files.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
And a lot of these stories are so well written because it's a vetted process. Not everybody who creates an SCP thing can actually be featured on the wiki. You type it up. They have like a panel of people read over it and see if it's a good enough story to put in to, you know, the canon SCP universe. The people that are writing these can go on to be the next great people that are writing the like legit scary stories like Stephen King or Dean Koontz, whatever. These folk got it in them to do something really amazing. You know, part of what I do in the paranormal world is I look at fictional stories and I try to find out where they came from. You know, Slender Man, for example, is technically a creepypasta, but is there some truth behind the Slender Man like phenomena? We don't know.
Don't know.
Yeah. So that's where we're at there. And that's, you know, but the SCP Foundation, some well-written, like, stories, and they have a couple different categories within the SCP universe, how you categorize them, right? So you have your safe, there's a lot of them, but I'm just going to go over, like, the very generic terms with them. So you have safe, which is they have an anomalous property to whatever it might be, but it's not going to cause you harm.
Okay.
You have your Euclid, which is, not good. Those things can probably kill you, but it doesn't take a ton to contain them. You can get them in there. And then you have Keter. If Keter is the class that if something got out or you can't contain, it could cause an end of the world scenario.
Okay. Wow. That's harsh.
And then there's Thorial. Thorial's kind of like the concept of keeping an eye on the box. There's a whole diagram behind it, but there's a ton of subgenres to it. But the ones we normally talk about, safe, Euclid, Keter, or Keter, if you will. Yes. So I got five of them today we're talking about. There are over 1,000 of these things, I believe 6,000 altogether, SCPs, and they're constantly coming out.
Have you read through all of them?
I've read through probably a good 1,000 of them.
Really? That's pretty good.
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes I'll just get curious and I'll pop on the wiki and I'll read about it because a lot of the characters or whatever they write in there make for good storytelling. So if I feel creative, I'll take like an SCP creature or whatever and I'll come up with a fictional thing behind it just to kind of generate the creative juices. Or there's a lot of podcasters out there on the paranormal side of things where all they talk about are the SCP Foundation. I can't think of the couple of the podcasts out there offhand, but they do exist. So there's times I'll toss on like an SCP podcast, throw it on in the background, and all it is people doing readings. SCP readings is one. But anyway, I got five today. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read you the SCP file number. I'm going to read you everything here that isn't redacted because keep in mind, a lot of things here are redacted because government agency, right?
Yeah.
And then we're going to get Count Panic's take on each one.
Let's do it.
And survivability. Okay. Can Count Panic survive encounters with these SCPs?
I hope so.
That's the game we're playing today. Yeah. So our first one is SCP-606.
All right.
Object class Euclid. You remember what Euclid is?
Euclid,
I just said it.
Yeah, Euclid. Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Okay, so what is it?
You're quizzing me right now. Wait, I got to get my survival method.
No, I'm asking you if you remember what Euclid was.
You did tell me this.
Okay, Euclid is middle ground. Doesn't take much to contain, but it can kill you. Okay. Special containment procedures. Subject currently resides with Agent Redacted, who is chosen as its owner. Both Agent Redacted and SCP-607 are to be placed under full surveillance for study and should be ready at all times with at least one D-class personnel. By the way, quick Bob point, D-class personnel, they're the agencies ran by an overarching like character. Then you have your high-ranking officials underneath them. D-class are usually like felons and drifters and stuff the government like kind of takes up and makes them work. And they usually get the hardest jobs that usually end up in their death. But I digress. D-class personnel on hand for subject to imprint on a imprint on in the case of the death of SCP-607 or Agent Redacted. When not being directly held or monitored by Agent Blank Redacted, SCP-607 is to kept shackled and bound in a small portable containment chamber. The containment chamber is designed to immobilize 607, allowing medical personnel to insert feeding tubes, IV drips, catheters, and other life-supporting devices. Due to the nature of 607, Agent Redacted has elected to keep the portable containment chamber on his person or in his immediate vicinity at all times. SCP-607 is a large gray male American short hair cat of with a collar reading Dorian. SCP-607 was discovered in late 19 blank when a man known as Redacted suddenly and without warning violently expired at a cocktail party in uptown New York City. The Redacted's death was later found to coincide perfectly with the moment a party attendee leaving the home mistakenly backed out over Redacted's cat. Due to the mysterious nature of the person's death, a local foundation operative joined the investigation as a consultant. Special Agent Redacted has stepped outside to smoke a cigarette when he heard a cute little mewling sound. 607 subsequently bonded with the Redacted agent, who chose to bring it back to the foundation as a pet and companion. The agent reported difficulty in supporting 607. The cat would not eat, became lethargic, and seemed to lack a will to live. Agent Redacted jokingly told fellow agents that he was experiencing sympathy hunger pains. 7 days after the Redacted agent's initial contact with 607, both he and the cat died of starvation. The circumstances surrounding the agent and the gentleman's death from the party piqued the interest of the Foundation, and the cat's body was taken into an isolation chamber until further testing could be ordered. 607 remained reanimated approximately 24 hours after its estimated death time. By the way, guys, sorry for double talking. We're having a little bit of audio issue, so everything's coming through one ear. It's really weirdly muffled, so I'm goofing up here. I do apologize.
One good ear.
One good ear currently. It was correctly speculated that once SCP-607 bonded with a person, a negatively symbiotic relationship was formed. 607 bonds with the first human individual it comes in contact with after reanimation. Several experiments were conducted, each involving 607 to a D-class personnel. Testing showed that injuries inflicted on 607 would show up on the bonded person in the closest representation possible. Striking 607 resulted in bruises on the personnel. Breaking one of the cat's front legs resulted in the personnel's breaking its arm. Termination of 607 via gunshot resulted in the death of the bonded personnel via bullet hole with no bullet found. In all of the experiments, SCP-607 reanimated approximately 24 hours after death with no apparent physical injuries. Perhaps most important to note, however, is 607's behavioral tendencies. Regardless of the bonded individual's attempts to appease the cat, 607 does not want to be alive and has been observed trying to not be alive. Keter, it has been, wandering, it escapes captivity a lot and wanders into Keter class cells, and it just can't, it'll keep living. In all cases, the death of 607 has resulted in the death of the bonded individual, with injuries and causes of death mirroring that of SCP-607. So in essence, this cat dies in one weird way, the person that bonded with dies in a weird way.
Mm, okay.
Death and injury testing on 607 has ceased since Agent Redacted accidentally bonded with it during an unauthorized breach of the containment chamber. 607 still displays unfortunate tendencies despite the agent's persistent attempts to form a favorable relationship with it. The Redaction agent has suffered severe bodily harm at times, leading to the decision to restrain 607 in a portable containment chamber filled with life support system. The Redacted agent is under close observation both this time. SCP-607 still displays on these unfortunate tendencies when removed from restraints. It is unknown if SCP-607 has always displayed such tendencies or if they are due to the resentment of the Foundation and the initial testing performed on it. Hashtag panics take, can he survive it?
Yeah, well, Bob, I'm more of a dog person myself. So,
sure.
Maybe if it was a dog, I have a doom. But you know what? I mean, yeah, I bond with cats before. So, I mean, I could probably easily fall for this, Bob.
Okay, but can you survive it? Do you think you could talk it out of being sad and wanting to not be alive anymore?
I think so. I'm an excellent communicator.
Okay. You think you're going to break it out of its sadness?
Yeah, I think I can, Bob.
All right, so we're going to say that one, Count Panicle, is going to survive.
I think you can too, right? You turn yourself into quite a cat.
I'm always going to be a dog person, but I am familiar with cats.
And you can talk about
cats are very strange animals, I'll tell you.
You're a communicator.
Something like that, I've been told.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so the next one is SCP-523, mm-hmm. Object Class Euclid, Special Containment Procedures. 523 is kept in a sealed room separate from the rest of Site-19's complex. Site-19 is one of the many sites in the SCP Foundation. The room is set to self-destruct in the event of an XK-class end-of-the-world scenario to prevent 523 from worsening the situation. The walls of the room have been laced with 2 millimeters of lead in the hopes that 523 will be unable to escape once again. I'm going to tell you about that. Mm-hmm. 523 is to be removed from the containment for experimental purposes only, and doing so requires permission from level 3 personnel or higher. Level 3 is very high up there. Personnel experimenting on 523 should be accompanied by at least one person able to receive low-frequency telepathic signals. Personnel in the presence of 523 are instructed to alert one another before blinking. Performing dangerous experiments on 523 is strongly discouraged. Removing 523 for practical use is strictly prohibited. The description. 523 does not have a consistent physical form, nor does it have any distinguishing marks by which it could be identified. It does emit a low-frequency telepathic signal in which the persons capable of detecting describe a dull ringing sound. The signal can be used to locate 523 if it escapes. This frequency is also assumed to be the source of 523's ability to short out electric recording devices such as video cameras and blank-out camera film. 523 has the ability to jump across short distances while unobserved and disguise itself as any inanimate object, mechanical or otherwise. 523 will disguise itself as an object that a nearby human is likely to make use of shortly. Once the human has picked up, drawn attention to, prepared, activated, or otherwise demonstrated that they are going to make use of SCP-523, will transform into a different object, unusable, or utterly inappropriate for the task at hand. These transformations can occur if 523 is unobserved or can occur in the blink of an eye. SCP-523's transformations are immediate and usually extend beyond the uselessness and into irony. Transformations range from extremely impractical to outright dangerous, including instances of, well, unfortunately, data expunged. Lead appears to prevent it from jumping out of the room, but does not prevent it from transforming.
Yeah.
It has jumped from containment multiple times, disguising itself as mundane but useful objects. Several accounts follow as such. Document 523-01. This is the victim is a Redacted doctor. disguise was a scalpel. Dr. Red Acted was preparing to perform a delicate autopsy on recently deceased D-Class Red Acted, who had been killed by a Red Acted SCP. You know, common theme here, Cal, get a lot of Red Acted.
I can tell you, yeah.
He asked his assistant to hand him a scalpel, and when he looked back at the body, he felt sudden increase in weight from the hand holding the scalpel. When he looked at his hand, he saw he was holding a chainsaw.
Hmm, really?
52302. This victim was Dr. Willis. Disguise, a picture of water. Dr. Willis was on break in his one of the on-site rec rooms when a fire broke out due to someone forgetting to take the foil off their baked potato in the microwave before, well, microwaving it. Dr. Willis grabbed the pitcher and, not noticing the liquid inside had changed colors after he picked it up, doused the flames in the liquid. Turned out to be, guess what?
What?
Gasoline.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Willis had taken in for treatment to second and third degree burns. 52303. The victim was an agent, Red Acted, and this one actually perished. It disguised itself as Regulation Foundation Pistol. Agent Red Acted, along with a team of D-Class personnel, have been assigned to oversee an experiment of 682 in which data expunged. 682 began enraged and began attacking the personnel. When the Red Acted agent reached for his pistol, he was suddenly surprised to produce a ring of keys. It was later discovered that the blades of the keys were all dull, unfit to open any door. Note, it seems that 523's transformations are more or less proportional to the gravity of the situation it is being used for. It is imperative that it be destroyed immediately in the event of an XK class end of the world scenario, as it may turn into something that would further cause the situation to become much worse. Like, you know, transforming into the sun.
That could be an issue. Yes.
All right, Count. Yeah. Can you survive 523?
Unlike the last one where I thought I could survive, this one might be a little tricky, Bob. I don't necessarily think I have maybe what it takes. I don't think I talked my way out of this one, Bob. That's a problem.
No. I mean, your panic stick on the cat, by the way. The wanting to die cat. I didn't get your opinion.
Well, yeah, I kind of brushed that. Yeah, I kind of blended that in together with the other one.
Oh, I got you. My bad. So why don't you give me your take on this one?
Well, this one, yeah, I don't think I could survive this one. The cat one, though, going back to that one, I mean, again, I bond more with dogs, but I could easily bond with a cat. There's a lot of cats that like me out there, but this one, not so much, Bob.
Interested to hear what you think of the case.
Yeah, well, the case too. Well, the whole thing with the lead and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot going down. But when it talks about survival mode, survival method.
Do you like the way it's written? I should say.
Oh yeah, I like even with redacted. I get we're protecting the privacy of the people out there, right?
Yeah, it's, it adds to the story.
It adds to the story. Yeah, you know what?
Yeah, right. We got
but. The story itself, the master storyteller, it is amazing.
All right. So let's move forward to 362, object class safe.
362.
Safe. So this one's considered safe, but has anomalous properties, right?
Yeah.
362 is to be stored in a polypropylene bag and kept in a standard lockbox. This lockbox is to be kept in a dedicated room with no materials pertaining to other SCPs, including handwritten or type files, smartphones, PDAs, post-it notes, memos, etc. Electric devices with access to the internet and or on-site internet are forbidden from entering or accessing said room. Containment chamber should include non-relevant books and magazines along with blank notebooks for observational purposes. Only persons possessing level 1 clearance or lower may receive authorization to enter the containment chamber and wear 362, wear it, which shall be done for research purposes and for said purposes only. Dr. Red Acted and the 05 blank possesses keys unlocking 362's lockbox. No other copies made without 05 authorization. Two security personnel must bar access to anyone not possessing the required clearance, and at least one surveillance camera must monitor each of the following before research and security purposes. Exterior of chamber entryway, interior of chamber entryway, lockbox, and the chamber itself. The description. 362 is a light blue t-shirt bearing the logo of Redacted, a children's Saturday morning television popular program in the late 1980s and the early 90s. It is a size medium with short sleeves. Its color appears to have faded and was likely a darker shade of blue. Its tag states that t-shirt is 100% cotton. Testing has confirmed this statement despite its apparent age. It is in good condition apart from said fading. Its collar and sleeves are not worn or threadbare and has no holes or rips. Test subjects wearing 362 have unanimously reported no feelings of discomfort, unease, or foreboding. Five subjects who ranged anywhere from 22 to 35 years of age have expressed what can be perhaps be informally phrased as amused nostalgia upon donning 362. In tests, it has been worn as briefly as 3.6 seconds or as long as redacted days, with mean duration of redacted hours. Aside from the obvious inconvenience of wearing item of clothing longer than a few days, the test subject in each case reported normal emotional responses. Upon doffing 362, its effects are immediate and almost invariable among tests, the only significant variable being at the duration test subjects must endure the phenomena before it ends. Immediately after pulling 362 off of his or her head, the test subject reports several to dozens of humanoid figures suddenly appearing in the room with them. The figures appear after the instant the test subject's vision becomes obscured by the material of 362 passing over the subject's eyes and as it is removed. These figures present with absolutely indeterminate features. Most to all of these figures seem to fix their attention on the test subject, and unless approached, will stand motionless. As a test subject who moves around the test chamber will find, these figures also move, but only to keep their attention fixed on the subject and or to avoid physical contact with the subject. These figures will go as far as to phase through confines of the test chamber to avoid contact with any living being. The figures themselves have been vicariously described as blurry, mirages, and most commonly shadowy or made of shadows. Often, a few of these figures will seem to take no interest in the test subject, but will instead explore their surrounding environment. They will appear to touch items, rifle through papers, page through books, operate computers, etc. Twice, a figure reportedly had appeared to handle and operate a device like a giga counter with which the figure seemed to scan objects or take readings for the duration of the sighting. Upon review of archived episodes of the Redacted show, the show appears never to have referenced or depicted anything resembling the figures, which appeared to all have to all the test subjects. After experimentation, test subjects, even those who expressed eagerness or amusement at the prospect of wearing 362, expressed unease when prompted to discuss the show. Though these figures reveal themselves only to the test subject, do not generate significant fluctuations in sensory equipment and fail manipulate physical objects, it is recommended that security protocol regarding 362 include vault containment with access granted only to relevant research and personnel. In light of incident 362-02, in order to avoid cross-contamination of SCPs and prevent security breaches, no items, information, or personnel level 2 or higher may ever be presented in 362's chamber prior to, during, or immediately after exhumation. Furthermore, under no circumstances may 362 be worn out by a person longer than 9 days. Addendum. Immediately prior to said incident, test subject 362 was worn for 31 days straight. As per research protocol, test subject has not been informed of the effects of doffing 362. Upon removal, the site that was redacted where it's kept experienced a containment breach which lasted a redacted amount of minutes when primarily and secondary power systems simultaneously failed. All debriefed personnel on the site reported experiencing feelings of dread during the breach, many of whom were trapped in rooms without power or means to get rid of when the fail-safe systems activated. Some personnel reported the sensation that other persons inhabited the room with them during the breach, despite being alone immediately beforehand. Many personnel felt as though they were being watched. Immediately after the breach, upon restoration of secondary power, primary power took an additional red acted minutes to come back online, the site's personnel discovered files scattered, books open, and notes in disarray. The IT division reported that several of the computers and other devices had accessed data expunged. Test subject experienced due to a really nasty amount of minutes after the power failed, so they unfortunately passed, and revealed to have an abnormally high adrenaline levels in the subject's bloodstream. So the longer you wear this shirt, the stronger these things become. What do you think, Count?
The longer you wear the shirt, the stronger they become, huh?
Yeah. What do you think? Do you like the story? First?
The storytelling. Yes, the storytelling is nice. It reads as someone that is believable, of course, there. But survival, right?
Yeah. Can Count Panic survive that SCP?
Jeez, Bob. I don't think so. I'm trying to think if I could really.
Are you going to try to wear the shirt for 31 days in a row? Do you think your willpower is better than that?
I got pretty good willpower, Bob.
Oh, so you're like, you wear it and you're like, oh, I'm feeling pretty good. And the second you try to take it off, you start seeing some weird things.
Yeah. And then I just got to leave it on, right? At that point.
Then you got to take it off and then it ends.
Or, I mean, take it off.
So the longer you wear it and then you take it off, something bad happens.
Okay. So I just got to keep. For the rest of my life, though? I mean,
you take it off and you put it back in storage. So you think you'll survive this thing?
I'm a 50-50 split on this thing. I think so. I got to give myself more credit in life. I think I'm going to do it.
Okay. You ready for the next one?
Sure.
All right. This is SCP-236, object class Keter.
Keter.
Do you remember what Keter is?
No.
Keter was the worst one. Hardest to contain.
Oh.
End of world. So end of world properties.
The one that, okay.
So the t-shirt's only dangerous if somebody wears it. You know, 31 days there was a containment breach, but it ended.
Yeah,
you know, somebody stole some information. But
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So special containment procedures. Any and all materials leaving the containment area are to be scanned for any contamination by 236. Any objects showing contamination by 236 are to immediately be returned to the containment area and cleaned of contamination. Personnel leaving the containment area must submit to a full physical examination and X-ray. No objects are to be left in the containment area without personnel present. Any objects appearing in the containment area are not to be touched until cleared by supervising personnel. Blast doors are to be opened only to allow personnel in and out of the containment area. No sudden movement or aggressive action of any kind is allowed in the containment area. Containment areas to be kept as dark as possible with night vision goggles recommended for all interacting personnel. Should traditional light be necessary, lights must be turned on remotely and waiting a period of 1 hour is to be observed before entry will be allowed. The description. 236 appears to be a swarm of near microscopic crabs. Individuals match no known form of crustacean, and elements of their physiology appear to be point of an artificial origin. SCP-236 appears to operate under the form of a collective intelligence or hive mind. The intelligence appears to grow when 236 are in close proximity and dissipate when they are divided. Large swarms appear to exhibit predatory intelligence and become significantly more aggressive than individuals. Swarms show aptitude with problem-solving, encircling tactics, and stealth. In addition, swarms may be able to take on physical aspects and appearance of inanimate objects, such as doors, chairs, or even complex patterns such as those found in paintings for an extended period of time. This mimicry is near perfect until casual observation and requires detailed observation to detect. Swarms will sometimes even destroy existing objects and replace them in what appears to be an attempt at better disguise. 236 can create additional individuals from any organic matter. This includes wood, cotton, and other materials derived from an organic source. 236 units appear to remove small portions of their matter with their pincers, consume it. And then they lay small spherical eggs, which hatch into new members after 10 minutes. Juvenile 236 look identical to the adults, but are smaller in size and lack the chemicals used in the defensive response. Juveniles reach full adulthood in 6-hour time. 236 individuals appear to fear light, rapid movement, or loud noises. The fear is reduced in proportion to the number of the units in the swarm, but even large collectives can be startled by a sudden sound or bright light. 236 are startled when mimicking an object will rapidly break apart into individual units, which will then scatter and hide. Swarm regrouping can take up to 24 hours. When cornered or unable to escape quickly, 236 units will infiltrate the defense response. This entails a unit raising its pincers and then detonating with an explosion equivalent to a 9.07 kilogram or 20 pounds of a C4 explosion. Whew. Initial research suggests that this is the result of a chemical reaction involving mixing one or three inert chemicals. Collection of these chemicals have been problematic due to the relatively minute size of the storage chambers and the likelihood of startling 236 during procedure. 236 will use humans or any living things as a resource provided the swarm is of sufficient size. Moderate-sized swarms can convert a whole body being in less than 5 minutes. Individual SCP-236 have also been observed entering the human body, typically while the subject is asleep, and begin to consume it from inside out. This behavior, coupled with the mimicry and defense response, make 236 very, very difficult to detect and contain efficiently. Abendum. While 236 has not been observed to mimic organic life, the possibility exists for 236 to develop behavior, notably during the testing of 2366, another SCP there. SCP-236 mimicked a brown bear and began to exhibit increased predatorial behavior and data expunged. Such formations are to be immediately reported and testing area cleared immediately. Hashtag panics take, and can panic survive the exploding crabs that can, you know, form shapes.
I don't know if I could do this one, Bob.
I don't know, man. A sudden flash of light or a clap of the hand, that'll do it.
It's a good story, first and foremost. Well, story. But can I do that? A good clap? You think that's all it takes?
Says a sudden loud noise can do it.
Yeah, but what's a sudden, described as a sudden loud noise? I mean,
clap, man. You just clap at him and scares, I guess. No, I don't know. Man. I mean, we'll have to find out when I shove you in there.
Yeah.
Now, let me know how it goes, man.
I think I could do this, Bob. I could do it.
You think you're going to survive the crabs?
Sure, I'll survive, yeah.
All right, I got time for one more.
Okay.
All right, next one is 1033. So 1033 SCP. Object class Euclid. SCP-1033 is to be held in a 15-meter by 5-meter standard cell, lined with 5-meter thick lead plating. Personnel entering 1033's chamber must wear approved Level A hazmat suits. If 1033's routine changes or if 1033 attempts escape, two guards stationed outside 1033's chamber are to reinforce with 8 more, all armed, with containment kit 4MK3 consisting of a SCAR-L assault rifle with an underbarrel net launcher, 2 flashbang grenades, and 1 M67 frag grenade. Description: SCP-1033 is a middle-aged Caucasian male, approximately 193 centimeters or 6 feet and 4 inches tall. SCP-1033 was discovered in New York, having, according to several witnesses, materialized in the middle of the road. Interviews with witnesses found that the people in the area experienced a vision-encompassing white flash, accompanied by hearing 2-second bursts of static from all directions. Witnesses were administered Class A mind wipe after the completion of the interview, followed by a media blackout regarding the incident. Upon initial inspection at the site of materialization, Foundation researchers found that SCP-1033 was emitting well over instantaneous lethal dose rate, a limit of high energy gamma neutron and X radiation at approximately 15,000 SV/HR. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that's a lot of radiation, though.
Yeah.
Hopefully somebody out there that's not me will be able to answer that question. SCP-1033 was initially contained within a shipping container surrounded by lead bricks, which was placed in its path. SCP-1033 was subsequently moved to storage site K, where he now resides. In all physical aspects, 1033 is an unremarkable, balding, middle-aged male. He is dressed in a business suit and carrying a briefcase. 1033's behavior is, calm, and each cycle beginning with every 33 seconds, the following timeline is a transcription of that routine. And from calm to more anxious to, you'll find out here in a moment. Every, 0 to 10 seconds, 1033 walks 30 paces forward, glancing at his watch approximately every 10 steps. Every 10 to 15 seconds, 1033 stops, kneels, opens his briefcase. Inside the briefcase is a single envelope marked with an unknown seal and a prepaid blank brand mobile phone capable of sending or receiving text messages and calls. 1033 opens the envelope, pulls out a sheet of paper marked with the words cable, astrimic, cipher, OUUT5LMO022, let's ruffle feathers. SCP-1033 types out, and this is 15 to 21 seconds, OUUT5LMO022, and a text message is to an Australian mobile phone number 0404 redacted. Investigation shows that this number has yet to be assigned to any mobile phone. At 21 seconds in, 1033 sends the message, puts the phone and letter back in its briefcase. 1033 is observed in looking into the distance, regardless of what actually is in front of him. At 25 seconds in, 1033 starts to chuckle quietly, having apparently spotted what he was looking for in the horizon. At 28 seconds, 1033 is blown backwards by 3 meters and is observed writhing on the ground, screaming in apparent agony. Flesh is seen being stripped off and flying behind 1033 as other parts of him disintegrate. The injuries 1033 sustains correspond with that of a victim of a 1.5 megaton nuclear device being detonated at close proximity. After completion of this routine, 1033 immediately reappears at the start of his routine in mid-step and begins the cycle again. If an object, human or animal, stands in the path of 1033, he will make no attempt to stop and will continue his cycle, pushing whatever obstacle is along with him. Count Panic.
Yes.
What do you think of the SCP-1033, and do you think you could survive an encounter with him?
Bob, it can't be done with a loud clap, right?
Not this one. This one's going to do it regardless.
This one's going to do it right now, guys. Well, no, Bob. I don't think I could do that for sure. I don't think I don't think so, Bob. It can't be solved with a loud clap. I don't think I could do this.
Yes. So, I don't know, man. This one seems like the easiest one to, like, do. Just avoid them. Don't walk near them.
Yeah. No. That's for sure. I mean, it happens. I don't know.
So, what was your favorite SCP we talked about today?
Oh, man. Maybe right off the bat, the cat.
The cat was a good one. It was kind of sad, but you just want to take care of the cat.
Yeah. Take care of cat.
Do you have any closing words for our audience tonight?
No, Bob. Well, I didn't mean to say it like that.
Nope, I got nothing to say. Good night, everybody.
No. Bob, I hear the... Hold on, let me figure it out. Sorry. You ever get your wire cut into your chair, Bob?
Yeah, are you okay?
Yeah.
You seem distant today. You okay?
No, I'm fine, just Bob, after podcast. I'm just making sure that the thing is here. Okay, Bob, yeah, my final message to the folks at home, again, as we are in the thick of the sun... fall solstice, autumn. We are in the veil is thinning as we speak. Everybody, no matter what activity you like doing, whether it be walking in the brisk leaves or brisk walkly in the leaves or pumpkin carving or bobbing for apples, this is the season to do it. So enjoy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Bob After Dark, folks. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. All right, good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not he'll wander all lost and as above, so below. Good night to my mom. Good night to my Tiff. No matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams in the mall. And Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy and comfortable. Good night, everybody.
Memoriam Development.